Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello everyone and welcome to the first AI horror pod with me, Mal Jutley and Maurizio Reyes. This is set up with the AI channel. Thanks to Gags for setting this up for us. This is the first time Maurizio and I are doing a podcast. This is the first time we're trying to even attempt to do a podcast. So the fear here is pretty real.
Yeah, man, I feel like I've missed a bit. I should have a bit earlier. Should have gone, ah, hello, but I missed it. So hello.
So horror, it's a bit of a niche thing, right? Because people look at me and say, you know, you're mental. Why are you a horror fanatic? Why are you not horror movies? And I think it's a lot to do with, and this is where Maurizio and I sort of became closer mates, to be fair. We worked together a while back and then we've realized we've got a mutual love for horror films. And then it just grew from there. And horror is a funny one because for us, a lot of it is down to, you know, sort of seeing, you know, what else can go on in a movie that really shocks us, surprises us, scares us to some degree. And I'm, you know, I don't really get scared much at movies, but for us, horror is escapism for us. It's almost like a bit of a break from the norm to sort of go away and forget about the world. So this podcast made sense for us to do because Gags approached me and said, look, we're going to do a podcast. I'm like, okay. And I've been apprehensive about it because there's so much I can talk about with Maurizio about horror. I got into horror, and I think Maurizio is probably the same, right? We got into horror quite young when...
I like to call it psychological abuse. Because like these days, you can just search stuff up on YouTube, you know.
Yeah.
It's there, or like various like streaming sites or whatever. You know, you can go onto Netflix and there's like X amount of films you can see. But back then, when everything was on VHS, you didn't have access to anything. I remember as a child, if I saw something that was really great on TV, I'd be like, right, make a mental note of that because in about 3 months they're going to repeat that.
When you say that, I remember when we used to watch stuff on BBC Two. And it was, and this is before Channel 4 time, that's how old I am. And BBC Two put this film late on at night, and I was a young kid at the time. You'd watch it, and you knew it was going to be scary, but you'd watch it because you knew your mates would talk about it at school the next day. And it was almost as homework to say, everyone I was going to watch it, I better watch it and see what it's about and talk about it next day. And you're right, you had to seek stuff out, man. Or you borrow a mate's video and say, look, can I borrow your copy of so-and-so?
I remember being that plugged in. I remember being led astray by my neighbour who had a load of dodgy VHS tapes and older cousins who put things on I should not have been watching. And they did get to me, and I would be lying there at night thinking about things like... I didn't even see it all the film all the way through, but Evil Dead. God knows, I must have been 6 or 7 or something. And I only watched up until one of the party turns into this sort of demon lady, and she gets, you know, it causes a bit of trouble, and then they sort of beat her down back into the basement. And then seared into my retinas was a sharp pencil going through an ankle. And I didn't know what to make of that, but I just remember it was just there in front of my eyes, and I could not look away. So yeah,
and it happens when you're a kid because I was similar with you in terms of I didn't always see a film all the way through. But if it was a horror film was on and someone, you know, a mate had it or somebody, you'd go around and think, oh, I better check it out. And then you'd watch about half an hour because you had to get back home. And there weren't mobile phones in those days. So you tell your mum, I'm home at whatever time, and you get home. Otherwise, you know, you get a few beats. So the problem with that was you almost had to watch it in chunks with your mates. And the first thing I think properly remember was probably Exorcist. And it's a pretty bad intro to get into horror films. But I remember watching it and thinking, oh, it's nothing, man. It's just some girl going nuts because it was all the build-up, wasn't it, at the start? So yeah. When I watched the first part of it, I was like, what's the big deal? And then obviously you go around and I watched it again. I'm like, whoa. And then to this day, the scene at the end when the priest jumps out the window, it's there, man. Like you said, burned in my head. That stuck with me as a kid, and it's always stuck with me. And Exorcist just has been a labor of love film for me because I've watched it numerous times since and the various cuts and stuff. But that scene always takes me back to being a kid whenever I watch it. And films do that, right? Horror films, you know where you were when you saw certain scenes or you shouldn't have seen them. Like Omen was another one for me. Those sort of films was always the ones that, you know, you as a kid, you shouldn't be watching them because you're not 18 and you're thinking, oh, I better watch it quickly or get caught. I'm sure the same with you.
Yeah, definitely had that with Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, The right. Dream Warriors. I mean, I remember, like, I must have been at secondary school, might have been at the start. I remember, like, my mate was like, oh, you want to watch a bit of this? And I just remember thinking, oh, this is meant to be the scariest film in the world. And then we sort of nipped around to his and put it on, and it was the scene where that girl basically gets her head shoved into a TV. I haven't seen it for a while, but it must look pretty silly now. But back then I was like, yeah.
And that happens because, so the other thing that messed me up was, my dad likes reading thriller books and murder mystery books, right? So as a kid, there was Jaws lying around at home. That and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He was reading those two books. And, you know, in those days, just they were there and there's a book that I picked up and I thought, what's this about? And again, I think I was about 8 or 9. I picked up this book about Jaws and I really got into it. And dad saw me, he goes, what are you doing? Because I'm reading your book. He goes, you shouldn't be reading that. But that, again, it gripped me. So I had to go and find the film. I thought, you know, there's obviously, because it said on the cover, now a big major motion picture. So I thought, I've got to find it somewhere, right? So that, again, got into me because I thought, there's movies out there that are being based around these amazing books. So then I discovered that, you know, there's actually horror books out there that have the same effect. And then, again, it's another bit of escapism for me to know that there's a book out there that I can just lose myself in for a little while. And then, obviously, you know, the Stephen King stuff, you know, how many of his books got made into great movies, right? And you grew up with that, didn't you?
Yeah, I certainly remember seeing, like, the Stephen King sort of book collection at the shop, and I'd have a little sneaky peek and sort of, you know, flick through some pages of, like, it to see what was going on in the middle of it. But I just remember looking at the covers and thinking, wow, this looks pretty grim.
Yeah, I had that with, I think a few years later, I was in secondary school, so I must have been about 12 or I wasn't a teenager, I remember at the time. And ITV had The Omen on TV one a week, the free open Omen films. And they're on after the news. So, you know, news at 10 o'clock and 10:40 would start. And luckily, by a quirk of fate, I had managed to get a TV in my room, an old little black and white TV. And we used to own a shop and then sold the shop and we just took some of the stuff home. And one of them was a TV. So I just managed to, you know, acquire this TV, put it in my room. And I thought, right, it's on. It's 10:40 after the news. The weatherman comes on. You're getting ready, right? And then weekly, I'd watch these in 3 weeks, the Omen films. And I was 12, and I thought, man, these are messed up films to watch for a 12-year-old. But it almost desensitized me because I was like, well, it's actually quite scary. You'd get the whole philosophy behind it and the mythology behind, all, you know, the devil and that sort of stuff. And then that piqued my interest.
I do remember, like, the Omen. I just remember being too small to understand and just asking, yeah, but there must have been some nice bits. I must have had some really nice times out as a family. And but seriously, I remember asking that about Terminator as well, like, because you know, there's some just bleak scenes, like with the punks at the beginning, Bill Paxton, his mob. And then Arnie, you know, he punches one, his fist goes all the way through his chest up the other side. And, you know, that was like another type, sort of one of those moments in my life where I'm just looking at it going, oh my God. And I'm just ended up just asking just stupid questions like, you know, just things around. Oh, but he must have been like really nice one day and done other things and not been like walking around trying to kill people and stuff. It was kind of bizarre because, yeah, being shown these things. And then I suppose my parents were pretty lax about it as well, because I remember they used to let me rent any old thing from the really? Video shop. Yeah, just me and brother used to spend, I think because they got bored, basically, because we'd be at the video shop and we'd be like staring at all the covers, just walking round, never make our minds up. And the staff would be sort of like, you know, trying to push us along, saying they're closing. And my mum would be like, all right, okay, come on. You got like 2 minutes. Come on, choose something. All right, this one, done. Right, okay, and we're off.
See, I got late into video renting because we had a video store local to us, but it wasn't very good. But I remember nicking posters from him. So I would go in there and he knew who I was because he was a local shop around the corner. So he knew I was young. I wasn't old enough to hire somebody's films, but he'd let me have some posters. So I remember taking home the video store rental of House. I think there was Fright Night, those sort of posters on my wall. And those were the things that kept me going. And then film wise, I never rented much because I couldn't get around to it, but you'd borrow it with your mates. But I think the one that got me.
You've seen House recently?
I haven't, no.
It doesn't hold up well, mate.
Really?
I remember watching it thinking, it's like, I remember like bits of it are like the funniest thing ever. And thinking that's such a great film. And I watched it recently and I'm like, oh, that's kind of ropey. Apart from Norm in Cheers. I remember that. He was when he makes
but
his.
The film, 80s films were there because you know, you knew what you're expecting with it. You know, it wasn't not like nowadays. You got loads of CGI and computer graphics and stuff. But then it was that, you know, it was painstaking makeup and making sure that, you know, they could get as realistic as you can. But obviously, the other genre of films, which was basically out and out gore and blood, which was, you know, you sort of like what is now the trauma stuff. You know, you knew what you were going to get with that. You knew it was going to be like, you know, outlandish blood and gore and guts, and it was going to be that. So you knew it was going to be ropey, but I think these sort of films, they weren't ropey because they didn't try to be. But now looking back, I think, whoa, man, you know, didn't play well. I think the other thing I also probably didn't get into till quite late was zombie films. I really didn't get into zombie films till quite late. I didn't really get them, to be fair, early on as a kid. It's only after I probably got into horror properly, sort of like, this is when I started working in video store. So I think 17, 18, I started working in Blockbusters.
Yeah,
and you'd get seven rentals a week for free. So I pretty much watched everything in whole store at one point. It's only then I started getting more into zombie films and thinking, right, you know, there's a whole load of zombie films here. And then I started appreciating them. But before then, it was all these sort of Omen and Jaws, Suspiria, Wicker Man, those sort of films, which are more, you know, weren't blatant out and out horror like the gore and blood and guts and the slashers, or zombie films. And I got late into that, to be fair.
Well, I think I saw the first one, you know, the 60s Night of the Living Dead. And I definitely enjoyed that one, but more from a home invasion style thing, you know, where you're sort of trapped in a building and the hordes of the undead are attacking. In fact, that reminds me of Assault and Precinct 13, one of my favorite John Carpenter films.
Yeah,
so I guess that plays out the same sort of way. Home invasion, strap me in. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, and I think the thrill I get from watching films is almost, I try and sort of think, well, what would I do in that situation? And it's a twisted way of looking at it, right? But I almost try and put myself, like, the only film that's ever scared me properly as I was a kid was Amityville Horror. Now, playing back again, it's probably not as scary if you watch it now, but as a kid, and it stuck with me, I shit myself because I put myself in a position. I think if I'm in that house, and if I'm in that from that person or the other person, or whatever, I'm thinking, damn, man, what would I do? And I'd be nuts. And I keep doing that with certain films. I keep putting myself in that situation. So the recent stuff, the home invasion stuff, I always do that. Even like Hush and Don't Breathe and those sort of films. I think, well, what would I do? And I think that helps appreciate the film. Whereas, you know, I just don't go into right, entertain me, go and see what you, see if you can scare me or not. You know, I don't try and do it that way.
Yeah. Things like that can happen at any point in your life. Yeah. You know, you can find a really good film that scares you. Because definitely, I mean, I was way too old now. I'm like 21. But when I saw, not 21 now, I'm 21 when I saw Audition.
All right.
And that was intense. So I remember watching, basically it was after Ring came out. Mm-hmm. And then everyone was on all this wave of Asian horror films. Really exciting stuff. And I was like, I want to see more and more. And then I saw like Battle Royale, and it was like,
great film.
Feeding the Habit. So, and then came across this one called Audition. And yeah. I remember the synopsis was a slow moving love story soon descends into extreme psycho shock horror. Okay. I didn't think too much about it.
Yeah.
Till I was sat down watching the thing. you've seen Audition, right?
I've seen, yeah.
All right. So it, you know, it's sort of it's slow burn. And I remember it's quite slow paced at the beginning, but yet there's enough in there to keep you interested.
Yeah. And I remember watching it and I'm thinking to myself, wow, how far is she going to go?
When limbs start getting cut off, you're like, game over, mate.
Exactly. But to be fair, that's what got me into a lot of these Japanese films Japanese horror films was the fact that they do push the boundaries. So I saw a pretty messed up film. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called Grotesque, and it is what it says. It's messed up.
I'm not going to spoil. Is this the this is the thing. I'm not really into spoilers.
I won't tell you.
And certainly, if I love the film, I won't. You're trying to say.
Yeah, I won't tell you what it's about.
But half woman, half thing.
No. This is. I won't say what it's about, but it's watch it for yourself. One day you'll find out what I mean, and thank me later, or don't thank me later. But the film itself got me into that psyche of almost looking at the films that do push the boundaries, you know, and then really go out there, and these sort of films made me realize that actually, you know what, horror's moved on, man. It's moved on from. Not scaring you mentally, but scaring you like visually, you know, like really taking what you're seeing on screen and just pushing it as much boundaries as you can and saying, right, all right, I'm here to shock you. And the Hostel stuff is there. I understand that. And the Hostel stuff is what it is, right? And Saw and those sort of films. But these Japanese horror films, they're done in a bit more realism. They're a bit more.
Well, I understand about the torture porn stuff.
Yeah.
You should refer to it as torture porn stuff, not the Hostel stuff, because Hostel is good. And I watched that with my brother. And at one point, Eli Roth, the director, pissed me off. I turned around to my brother and said, he's done it. He's basically, there's a torture scene earlier on where you are disgusted. You're looking at the screen, you're going, oh my God.
Which one is this? The one in the head or the Achilles one?
The Achilles one. That's the first one, isn't it? That's the first torture bit at the beginning. But I'm just saying, there's a key scene right at the start, and you are horrified by it. And you don't realize, but in the third act, there is a torture scene, and you are sat there going, yeah, go on, get him. And I thought, wait a minute. Fucking Eli Roth, what he's done is he's pulled a number on me, and without me realizing I've suddenly become an accomplice, and the stuff that shocked me before, I'm willing it to happen at this point.
Exactly.
And I thought that's pretty good. But yeah, I understand what you mean, because there are plenty of other films where, what the hell, let's just, you know, there's things that are there, don't seem like they're there for a particular reason.
Serbian film.
that works well for me. Other than
but I know why though. You told me the other day that you think he's held back, right?
I do not endorse the action and scenes in that film. No,
but
what I found really well. What do you mean, but? No, what I found worked really well was the first half of the film. It was like some sort of it was almost sort of David Fincher-esque. It was quite bizarre. You didn't know what was going on. You didn't know. You knew it was some sort of descent into depravity, but you didn't know,
mate,
how far it was going to go. All right, it went a bit bonkers, balls to the wall.
It's messed up. I saw it twice.
You saw it twice?
Yeah. I saw it once on my own. Thing. Let's see what the fuss is about. Because remember, it got pulled from Firefest, didn't it?
I know. Through other means, went to see it. Got to see it uncut, because I thought, I'm not going to...
Yeah,
you know,
same here.
Yeah.
Had to and be then... Done. I saw it once, and then I saw it again because I thought, mate of mine,
what's wrong with you?
Well, no, I told my mate, mate, you got to watch this film, because he was a bit sort of like, oh, I've heard about this film. Is it as bad as you think everyone says it? I was like, you know what? I'll watch it. He goes, oh, why didn't you come around? I'm like, oh, I didn't. And then stupidly, I agreed to go around and watch it again.
Have you seen Irreversible?
I have, yes.
How many times?
Only once. Only once.
All right, yeah.
And Martyrs only once.
You can still keep your card for society. As a member of society. Yeah, because Reversal was messed up, was it? Like a 12-minute rape scene.
It's brutal, man.
Cutaways. Something else.
And it's the sound is the harrowing part, because you sort of think, fuck, man, what's going on? But then Mars is the same. I mean, not the remake, that the Disney version of it, we called it at Fright Fest. But no, the original Martyrs messed up, man.
With that, because that's French, right?
Yeah.
I think there's some really great films coming from France. They have a certain approach to horror that I like. We're talking Switchblade Romance.
Yeah.
Have you seen that one?
I haven't seen that, no.
Oh, it's good, man. I can't say anything about it then because you should really get to see it. Yeah, it's got some really visceral bloodletting in it. It involves a serial killer type scenario, but it works. And there was something else around that era. There's a couple of them, but basically they all sort of build up to Raw, yeah, which I saw yesterday and I loved.
Raw was great, wasn't it? It was great.
I remember I should have seen it on the big screen, actually. It's a shame I didn't.
I managed to
like go into my local cinema and take one of their promotional sick bags, Raw sick bags.
Oh, really?
This will come in handy.
It wasn't that bad, to be fair.
It was, mate.
I found part of it funny. Some of the humor was brilliant in it.
You saw the licking of the eyeball, right?
Yeah. But
were sat there eating your popcorn, were you?
Oh, yeah. You know me, mate. In the movies, I'm eating throughout every film I watch. So yeah, I was sitting there eating popcorn. But to be fair, for those who haven't seen it, I won't say too much. But the first time she does what she does, there's a comedic element in that, because it's almost like, you know, her reactions and the way it's shot. You know, I did smirk a bit. Sort of, there was a bit of humor in there. You know,
over my head, mate. I just found it really sort of like more art house. And
oh yeah, of course. Being a French film is going to be that art.
Coming of age, girl goes off to university, comes of age, and sort of big, you know, and that sort of family thing where they discover their identity.
Yeah.
No laughing for me. There might have been a couple of gags there.
No, I wasn't laughing. I wasn't that laugh out loud laughing. I was just, there was elements of, like, you know, twisted humor in there. Or maybe just the way I saw it, I don't know. Like the club scene, for example, was an interesting one as well, right?
And you're starting to worry me now. Yeah, I can't believe I'm going to sit next to you for 5 days. It's my...
Well, I enjoyed it. I liked Raw. I was hyped up for it, though, because I was sitting there thinking, this is going to be bad. It's going to be bad. But I thought it wasn't that bad. But I liked it. I enjoyed it.
I heard it was bad, and I sat there, and I thought, this is bad. This is bad.
So look,
bad as in terrible. I mean, like,
yeah,
dead sushi. Have you seen that?
Yes. We saw it at Fright Fest, didn't we?
Yeah, that's where I saw it. Because I don't think I ate a rice-based dish for months after that. And it wasn't because it was scary. It's because it was disgusting.
Mate, we've seen
I fell asleep during it as well. It was enough to disgust me and send me to sleep.
And put you to sleep. But the thing is, you find some bad films there that allow you to sleep, right?
It's the scheduling. It's sitting. I mean, when you're watching... Well, we'll get onto that a bit later. I'll come back to that.
Yeah, but I know what you mean, though. You do take a strategic nap during a film, which you know is going to be not all that. Well, the dishes line looks really good, but we'll come to that. But I saw, to finish up with Raw, I saw Raw with the Fright Fest crowd. So that's what, you know, it's a hardened crowd. So,
right,
you know, it wasn't too bad.
How that would have been a different experience. I understand now when you're saying, oh, that was funny, probably because the entire room of people laughing. I remember, like, I'm seeing a film where there was so much screaming from this girl all the way through the film that by the time she got offed,
everyone cheered.
I remember one person just standing up and clapping his hands, and then everyone else just started laughing about that.
Yeah.
You know, that does sort of give you a different
So you can see the crowd I was with the film, how I would have enjoyed that film differently.
I watched it in silence. I had to have my headphones on. I wasn't allowed to like watch the thing with the sound up because my family aren't very they're not very horror inclined. It's like the dirty secret in my family. It's like,
oh yeah, same here. All right. So talking of which, let's what have you seen lately that you can recommend that I may not have seen?
Raw. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Right, you've seen. I saw a thing the other day. Autopsy of Jane Doe. Have you seen that yet?
No, I haven't.
It's all right, man. It's all right. I won't give too many spoilers away, but it's done well.
Bits of it. The effects look really good.
They really are, especially the autopsy bits and bobs that go on.
God damn it! There's someone I follow on Twitter, and she actually provided the expertise in that area. I've forgotten her name. Right. It'll come back to me, and I'll let you know.
Oh, good, great stuff. So I saw that the other day. That was good. I saw it on my own, but it wasn't scary such. But I can see it being, if you're a jumper, then it will make you jump it a couple of times. But it was done really well, and I think it was it was good how it was in that enclosed space and things were going nuts around the people, and you were with them on that journey. I enjoyed that. That was pretty good. I saw Get Out. You've seen Get Out, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think?
It was good. It was telling a story that needs to be out there and told. The only thing I thought was maybe it was just a bit, I think it could be a bit more subtle maybe, but then that's just me. I think certainly when you have the first time these stories are being told in the way they are, you know, maybe just the way to reach a large mainstream audience is to just tell the story, you know, nice and simply. Whereas I liked a bit more subtlety, but it's still a great film.
Yeah, yeah. I like the message behind it, but also like the fact the way it was I like the subtle bits that alluded to what was going to happen. For those that may have seen the film, the bits at the start where you get stopped on the way to the parents' house, they both get talked to differently. You know, there's bits when they're talking to other members of the family, you can see there's something going on there. And obviously, in hindsight, it makes a lot more sense. But even the end bit, and I won't spoil it for the people who haven't seen it, but the end scene, his actions almost are automatic because of the way society programs you to be. And I think that was really great, the way it was done and how it was almost captured. It still captured that element of fear because of his skin color and because of how he's trained to almost be. And I like that. It's a really powerful film.
Yeah, I completely forgot the ending. I'll have to go back and watch it.
You seen Annabelle Creation?
No, and I'm not going to. I knew when you were going and like, you're going to go see it. It's going to be great. No, it's not going to be great. The film where, what was it, Conjuring, where in a brief scene, they cover a little story to do with Annabelle the doll. Like, yes, it's a scary doll. Oh, I think it's a pretty embarrassing picture of me, like, dressed up in sort of Annabelle garb. That.
Oh, really? I want to see this.
I'll dig it out and share it. It's on the internet.
All right.
Yeah, it's a scary doll. Yes, it's a scary story. Now, you don't have to go make some films just to make some money for it. Because, like, the first one, I think I've got it. I keep being given free copies all the time. I've got a couple of Blu-rays.
I've got a couple of versions of Annabelle. The first one, it is awful.
It's like the DVD that won't die. It just keeps coming back.
Pretty much. Annabelle Creation's all right. It's nothing groundbreaking. It's wait for it on DVD or Netflix. Don't pay money to watch it, if I will say that. But it's a worth a watch. You know, it's good to watch some people that aren't horror fans but want to watch a scary film. They'll jump at a few bits. There's some bits. There's loads of plot holes, obviously. But it's a good film to watch with your mates on a Saturday night if you've got nothing better to do, and a few of them aren't into horror films. Watch them jump and get scared. But it's you and I will think, oh, all right, fair enough. To be fair, you've seen the home invasion ones, Don't Breathe and Hush, right?
I've seen Don't Breathe. I really like that. It's like the home invasion where they're invading the house of blind army veteran. And I thought that was quite interesting, actually. It was some nice little set pieces and some interesting way of setting up some action, which you wouldn't necessarily, you know, think of in these types of films. So yeah, no, I liked it.
I did too. Yeah, I like the way
it's kind of nasty a bit later on with that.
That's what I mean. Yeah, the way it evolved from what looked like a simple home invasion film to like, whoa man, there's a twist here and it's pretty messed up. And that bit was crazy because it sort of just changed gear suddenly. And again, I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but it does change from a home invasion film to something that just goes out there. Think, right, here you go. Make it is what you will. And I like the fact that it did that.
I did see Submarine Sea. I caught a film at the London Indian Film Festival.
Oh, yeah. I didn't go to that, unfortunately.
It was called Hide and Seek, a horror film. And
S-E-E-K?
No. Just Hide and Seek. Well, that wasn't the real name. The real name was something else I can't pronounce, but translated, it's Hide and Seek. And I was sat there thinking, right, there's going to be some badass banger tunes or whatever. Yeah, some Bollywood stuff. And it was quite funny because, well, no, there wasn't, but the director, it was an independent film that he got financed, and he mentioned in the Q&A that... Mm-hmm. The stereotype, the most of the producers he spoke to were like, is there any chance you could put some Bollywood tunes in there? So he had to, he had a bit of trouble getting finance for it. But then he got the right people involved who liked his vision, because this horror film was sort of just a bit more straight up, more in a Western style of horror, about pregnant lady, a couple who escaped the city to go hide out in some quaint little village because the husband's got into some trouble with a gang and he's afraid he's going to get beaten up and killed. So they run off.
Sounds like every Bollywood horror film or Bollywood film, mate.
Oh, yeah. There's no dancing, though. There's no dancing. No music.
Ah, you missed out, mate.
But there were some nice moments. It's some nice moments. I liked it. It had some bold ideas.
My mate's doing a Bollywood horror night. This is a friend of mine, Merlin Roberts. He does 70s sort of retro horror films. He'd done a few recently, and he's doing one that he basically said, look, if you're going to come, I'm going to do it, or there's no point doing it. So it's a film called Band Darwaza, which is basically Closed Door. It's a horror film by the Ramsey Brothers. And I'm not plugging it aside, but what I'm trying to say is that there is a whole genre of Bollywood horror, sort of 70s and 80s horror out there, which is it's good in what it does in terms of...
Who are the Ramsey Brothers?
South Indian, I want to say. R-A-M-S-A-Y.
Well, the directors.
Yeah. But just to follow on what you're saying, there's a whole raft of films out there. There's a big movement in the 80s and late 70s and 80s, even 60s to fair. My dad, again, that plugged in my dad, he used to go on about these horror films back in the 60s. He used to watch the Bollywood horror films. And I think maybe that's, again, subconsciously, it piqued my interest as well. So there is a genre out there of Bollywood horror films, which is, you know, retro enough for you to appreciate, cheesy enough for you to think, oh, yes, Bollywood. But it works on some level somewhere. So I'm glad you enjoyed the one you did see, mate.
Prevenge. No, you going to mention that?
Yeah, I was about to mention...
We were sat next to each other. We both saw it.
Yeah, we both saw it. Yeah, I was going to mention the thing beforehand, Love Witch before then, but I can talk about Prevenge. Prevenge was great. I remember the build-up to watching Prevenge. I was at work that evening before going to work, and my mate's like, oh, Mal, where are you going tonight? I'm like, I'm going to see a film. What's it about? About a woman who's pregnant, and the baby makes her kill people. And I work in an open plan office, and people just look at me and think, Mal, are you feeling all right? I'm like, yeah, it's a horror film. It's a horror comedy. Nothing funny about that, mate. Yeah, it's a film. It's funny. It's Alice Lowe. You know, sightseers, no. So people just, when they give them that blurb of the film and then you mention what it's about and it's a, you know, a psycho killer killing everyone because the baby tells them to, people look at you funny, man. But on the flip side, when I saw it, it was brilliant. It was brilliantly done, brilliantly written. I remember watching it thinking, you know, again, there was humor in there, me and my twisted humor, which I enjoyed. It was funny. But the fact that she made it while she was pregnant, and she had that finite time to make that film, just blew me away, you know? I mean, I remember we were there, weren't we? And we were there for the Q&A afterwards when she had the Q&A after the film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because it was independent one. She shot down in Cardiff quite quickly as well, obviously, because it was just mad. Because I think she got approached to do this thing, or to come up with an idea to do something to do. She's like, well, you know, I'm pregnant. That gives me an idea. Let's make a film about... like some sort, it was a revenge film involving a pregnant lady who is killing people. I thought it was pretty good. I was always going to go and see it because I love Sightseers, and not only she didn't just star in it, she wrote it, like co-wrote it with Steve Oram, who wrote
Did you see that with me at Fright Fest, or did you not see it?
I did see it. I wanted to watch a proper horror film, but I remember.
We experienced it, mate. We didn't see it. We experienced it.
Yes.
For anyone listening, R is basically, I think, 8 A's and a H at the title of the film. It's a film. It's a view on society, but with no dialogue. Just groans and grunts, mostly. Right? Isn't that right, Maurizio?
Noel Fielding has his penis bitten off, is what I remember.
That's right. And Toya Wilcox takes a dump in the kitchen.
Yes.
So go and watch that, people. It's good. It's good fun. Right, talking of Fright Fest, we mentioned it every now and then. It's Fright Fest next week, isn't it? This time next week, we'll be sitting there watching, I think it's Death Note.
So what is Fright Fest, Mal?
Right, Fright Fest is a five-day film festival based purely around horror films. Now, it's not out-and-out horror films like just slashers and stuff and gore. It's all sorts of horror films. Horror can be psychological thrillers. Horror can be horror comedies. Horror. We've even had horror musicals there. There's possession films. There's all sorts of films that take on that genre tag. And it's based in Leicester Square. It's back at the Empire after a 3-year hiatus, I think. Back at the Empire, Leicester Square. And Fright Fest basically is five days of horror films. You watch 3 on the Thursday evening and then 5 the following 4 days.
Back up a second. 5 days, there's 64 films on 5 screens over 5 days. And you pick and choose which ones to watch.
That's why you're the hype man. Yep, that's it. So, you've got these huge amount of films and you can take your pick. My experience of Fright Fest grew from watching one film on one festival to now going for the full 5 days every year.
What's that one film? What was the one film? Do you remember?
It was Red Hill back in, seven, 8 years ago. I just wanted to experience what it was. So I saw Red Hill and I saw the crowd. I thought, wow, this is amazing. And then I came back the following year and I did 2 films, or was it opening night? I think, can't remember now. I'd done opening night when it was Final Destination 5, that opening night. You were there for that, I think. And then it grew from doing one film to one, doing an evening to doing a weekend, Saturday and Sunday, to then doing the full 5 days. So next Thursday kicks off at 6 o'clock in the evening. First film is Cult of Chucky. And then by the time Monday evening rolls around, 1 in the morning, I'll have watched 25 films, give or take. But these are the good thing with Fright Fest is it's put across, like Misha says, 5 screens. And they've got your main screen, which is basically your blockbuster films or your big films, either chosen by the organizers or, you know, the production companies or the distributors, you know, put it on a big screen. And then what you call discovery screen films, which are basically either independent films or maybe sometimes foreign films or films that probably haven't got that marketing behind them, but nonetheless good films, which you then can take a pick on. So basically you spend what we have done for the last couple of months now, trying to work out what we're going to watch, when we're going to watch it and how. My plan is almost done, give or take a couple of films.
So it's, what is it? 64 films, 64 yes. Horror films.
Yes.
I didn't say 64 good films. It could be mix. it's a bit potluck, but I've seen some absolute quality.
Oh, over the years, we've seen some great stuff, mate. I mean, like last year, you were quite impressed with some of the films, right?
Yeah, you mentioned The Love Witch. Actually, that was my film. Was that last Fright Fest?
Last year.
Yeah, that was my film of the year. Because I was just I don't usually watch the trailers, but when I saw the trailer for Love Witch, it just looked so striking and so different, so bold. I was completely taken in. And then to find out that the director, what's her name, Annabella, where are we?
She was there, wasn't she?
Yeah, she didn't just direct it. She did a number of, she wrote it, she directed it, she edited it. She storyboarded every shot.
She made some of the costumes.
Yep. She did. I think she wrote some music and songs, got them commissioned.
Yep.
Built some of the sets, I think. And, hand stitched some of the costumes, or all the costumes.
Yep. It was her whole mind.
7 years it took her. And it's just gorgeous to look at. It looks like it was made in the 60s.
Yeah, 60s, 70s, that sort of thing. It was great. I mean, to me, that stuck out. I'll say that stuck out. But over the years, there have been some great films. I mean, from last year, we had obviously Love Witch. One I like, obviously Train to Busan closed it, and that blew the roof off, right? And that was amazing zombie film to watch. If you haven't seen it, go and watch that. I enjoyed Pet. I don't know if you saw Pet. That was good.
Yes. Yeah.
Cruel Summer, man. Oh, man. So this is, I always take a punt on a couple of films, right? Which is my banker for the year. And last year was Cruel Summer. And based on true events about a kid that gets bullied, he's got ADHD or some sort of learning disability, right? And there's bullies there. He goes camping and gets bullied to death, basically, right? There's no spoilers there because it's based on a true events. But I saw it first thing in the morning on a Saturday, I think it was. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. And man, it's harrowing to watch. I walked out thinking, damn, I need a drink. Because it just batters you down every step of the way. That film just, you know, it's bleak and it's hard going. It's on Sky now, actually, on demand, so you can watch it if you want to watch it if you haven't seen it. And based again where I saw it, the time of day I saw it knocked me for 6. But that was a good one last year. I'm trying to think what else was half decent that we saw last year. Devil's Candy. Did you end up watching that?
I did. I think you saw it though in Glasgow, right?
Okay. Yeah.
I loved it. It's a slow burn horror. Infused with heavy metal, in its DNA, and it's got Ethan Embry in it.
Yes,
who is magnificent.
He makes a lot of decent films. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just paced in a way. It's not sort of focused on the killer. Maybe more the sort of the victims of the family around it. It sort of focuses on them and the struggles that they're going through. I found that really powerful. I liked it.
No, it was good. He's in Fashionista this year, if you want to check it out.
Yes, that is one of my ones I'm going to go see because he's in it. Because he can pick a film. I think he also did Cheap Thrills. Yeah.
He did, and Cheap Thrills. So there was two writers, I think, was a writer or director. One of them, I think one's making 68 Kill and one's making another film this year for Uppers as well. So that's going to be interesting to watch.
So I mentioned to you that I saw Dead Sushi and I found it, when I wasn't sleeping, I found it quite offensive. and part of that might have been down to the fact that it was like 1 a.m. and I'd lost my sense of humour at that point. But I was equally tired when I saw Cheap Thrills. It was on on the Saturday night.
It was Sunday, mate. It was breakfast, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was definitely after a heavy night. 1 a.m. and it was that film. It was like that seedy bar on the edge of town. You just I don't know, sink into it. It worked. And it starts off with a few guys in the bar doing a few bets.
Yep.
And then it just descends.
Yeah, it spirals.
Yeah. It worked really well, and it kept me going. Yeah. I watched it. I couldn't fall asleep. Not at all. It was just amazing. I loved it.
I loved it. And before we go into this year's movies and what we're going to probably be watching, I just want to give the listeners a rough idea of the kind of films that have been on a Fright Fest over the years. There's some great ones over the years. So early on, there was Scream was on. There was Scary Movie for the Comedy Style was on. But then it sort of changed gear a bit, and you had things like Battle Royale was on at Fright Fest. Donnie Darko was on at Fright Fest. 1 Hour Photo, which I actually quite liked, was on at Fright Fest. These sort of films, you know, have played well at Fright Fest. Obviously, Hatchet has been there. We know that for a fact. Cabin Fever was there. Yes, it was. House of a Thousand Corpses played at Fright Fest, which was an amazing film. And I still love it to this day. Old Boy played at Fright Fest back in 2004. I'm trying to think what else. The sort of films that have played there have been some phenomenal and stellar movies, you know. Looking through the list that I've got written here now, that will probably stick out. Oh, what was... didn't Pan's Labyrinth play there once?
It did.
Yes, it did. That's right. Yes, Pan's Labyrinth played there.
That was before my time.
Yeah, I wasn't at Fright Fest then when it played. Hey, did you know David Soul was at Fright Fest?
What?
I only know that because... Yeah, well, I don't know that because of the promo this year. They put a promo of all the Fright Fest in the back in the days. And he was there on stage for something. I've got to work out why he was at Fright Fest because it was, again, before my time. But David Soul was at Fright Fest.
Nice.
I've got to work out why he was there. What's that going on there? Wrong Turn 2's been playing there. There have been some really, really decent films. And also, if you go through a list of films that have been there, some of them are like films that you wouldn't know because, again, they're these independent films that get picked up or don't get, you know, don't get the promo they should do, but there are some stellar films.
You mentioned Wrong Turn. That is definitely one of my guilty pleasures. I'll watch that over and over again.
Yeah.
Not any of the other ones, the subsequent ones. The second was pretty good, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. And Kiel has played there. So obviously, Ben Wheatley's been a sort of a regular at Fright Fest, you know, in his early career. And he's been, and I remember he was there for an award a few years back as well. So, you know, people like Ben Wheatley have been there and have done the Fright Fest, you know, sort of circuit as well and have moved on. And it's been great to see those people do that and the films that have come out of it. I think, and obviously don't forget the last film we ever saw at the old Empire was Big Bad Wolves, right? Which was, brilliant film. I think it's on Netflix or was on Netflix. Subject matter is pretty brutal, but
Israeli,
again, it's done in a way.
Israeli horror.
Yeah. And you know, those sort of films were great to watch, but having seen that in the old styles Empire screen was phenomenal. So with that, this year's Fright Fest, what are you watching? What do you want to watch?
Okay. So, I mean, it's a big old list, 64. So what I generally do is I'll look for anything that's got directors that I've seen stuff before and I know and love. I suppose this year it's going to be writers as well, because Cheap Thrills writer is involved in the film, so I'm definitely going to see that. I think 68 Kill Trent Hager.
Yes.
And then there's some actors who always consistently are in things I want to see. So I'll watch anything with Larry Fessenden in it, because he's top notch. I think he's doing Psychopaths.
Yes, he is. And then obviously closing film Thursday.
Ethan Embry is in Fashionista. There's also things like I'll watch in, there's some really good films that are coming out of Australia and New Zealand, so I'll keep my eye out for them to see if there's anything there.
Yeah, there's one, Killing Ground, Sunday First Up, which is another one of camping stories gone wrong out in the outback kind of film.
And then I see that Patricio Valadares is back again with a film, this time not screening on the main screen. He's on Prince Charles Discovery 2. He's got a film called Night World. Now, this man has taken 4 hours of my life so far, and I will not give him any more time. Watch the absolutely horrendous... Oh, what was it? Oh, I forgot the name of it now. Oh, I'm so angry, I forgot it. It's, something like... I don't know, it's Casa en las Alturas. Oh, I can't remember it now. That means people are going to go and watch it. They're going to know. I tried to warn them, but I can't remember the name of it.
You're going to watch it because of you now.
I'll find it. So, yeah, he did that, and there was a second one he did. Oh, this is getting to me now. This is all falling down around me now.
we'll tweet you later.
I'm definitely not going to watch Night World. But then this time, Night World has got Jason London in it from Dazed and Confused and Robert Englund. So,
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so the fella's leveled up. He's now, got proper people. Yeah, but
the last Robert Englund film we saw at Fright Fest, that one where he's in the cinema, wasn't very good at all, was it?
I don't know. I thought it was okay. You thought it was a bit silly, granted, but it was okay.
Yeah. But the other one I'm looking forward to is the closing film. It's called Tragedy Girls. So this is a guy called Tyler McIntyre. He did a film called Patchwork, another horror comedy. And it is a comedy, not my twisted comedy horror.
I've got the names. He Hidden in the Woods, right?
Yep.
And that was just terrible. What is it? Some sort of incest rape film where it ends with some sort of Mexican
Welcome
standoff.
Welcome to the AI horror pod, people.
Mexican standoff was all right. Yeah. Everyone died. That was okay. And then the second one, do you remember Downhill? Was it starts
I remember
with
Downhill.
Some radical cyclist who wants to do some... That was, of course, in Chile, and then
that was lunchtime. I should have taken lunch.
Stumbles across someone who's stumbled from the that Eli Roth film set of was that one where they're all in Cabin Fever. Yeah, they found an extra Cabin Fever. He's walking around all diseased and everything, and the baddies catch him, and then the baddies are like some sort of weird sex cult, and I think there was some weird insects as well. It was painful. And I remember, being sat watching that, and I really wanted to see something else that was in another screen, but I'd missed it. Yeah. It was so...
But that's the joy of Fright Fest, mate. You sort of take a punt in the film, and you hope it's going to be great, and it's not.
That I've just remembered the worst film I've ever seen.
Go on.
At Fright Fest. Landmine Goes Click. What?
Really?
That's
the worst film you've seen.
You thought it was good?
No, I've seen worse. That's what I mean.
Dude. It's so bad. All right. So the premise was
it wasn't a bad film. It wasn't that bad.
A couple are on holiday in, what is this? Oh, I want to say Serbia. I'm not sure.
Let's go with that.
Yeah, but where there's been a lot of conflicts, a lot of issues. And then they're off the beaten track. And then accidentally someone stands on a landmine. And that's the title of the film. Landmine Goes Click. So
it wasn't.
He's got his girlfriend and not his girlfriend, I don't think.
Let's not give it away because someone's gonna see it.
And then Ron Jeremy turns up. No, I don't give spoilers away. Of course I'll give spoilers away because it is shit.
Someone might like it, mate. Somebody might like it. It's not the real Ron Jeremy people, but it's a very good lookalike of Ron Jeremy, I should say.
Do you remember Irreversible was a powerful watch and pretty bleak.
Yeah.
Landmine Goes Click has a similar, what can I call it? It was like, it was the bizarrest tender rape scene I've ever seen. And I'm sat there and I'm thinking, should I just get up and leave? I think I should get up and leave. But then everyone's going to think,
again,
oh,
you saw it first thing in the morning, mate.
No, it offended me. It was just so bad. And then,
hang on, I saw Tolpa. Is he Tolpa?
Q&A, right? The Q&A. Yeah. I thought, okay, director's going to get up and he's going to say, yes, I made this arty film about the West should stay away from these areas. You know, we don't need them. And, you know, and the guy was like, no. They got a chalkboard out and they go, what ideas can we come up for a film? Someone steps on a landmine. Go! I could almost imagine they after they found that idea, they went, right, great, grabbed their cameras, ran over to that area, started filming, and the writer is hidden behind some rock, like writing the script there and then, because it was so bad.
Right, I think we're divided on this. I want people who listen to this podcast to go on, find Landmine Goes Click, watch it, and let us know what you think. And if it's bad, as Richard says, we'll see how many votes we get for that. It wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible either.
It was offensive. It just lacked ideas.
No. Look, it wasn't great. I wouldn't watch it again. I wouldn't go out and buy it. But I've seen worse.
Mal loves it.
On a happier note, Tragedy Girls is based by a guy called, well, made by a guy called Tyler McIntyre. He did a comedy called
Patchwork.
Did you say
on a happier note, Tragedy Girls?
Yeah. Well, no. There's a build up, mate. Okay. So the happier note being, there's a horror comedy that Tyler McIntyre did called Patchwork. Patchwork was, imagine Reanimator, but funny, or funnier. And it's this guy that makes the perfect woman from three different women. Now, look, again, it's not twisted humor. It's actually done quite well. But it's, the film was about them three learning that they're now one woman and come to terms with it and trying to piece together what happened and why it happened and find out who did it and take revenge on it. And it's brilliant. I'm not sure how you're going to find to watch it because I've not seen it out on Netflix, but you can probably buy it somewhere. Watch it. It's great. And this dude is doing the closing film at Fright Fest called Tragedy Girls. And again, it's supposed to be a funny slasher, kind of like Scream meets Heathers, which really piqued my interest. So that's where I'm heading on the closing night of Fright Fest. It looks like it's going to be going to bring the house down, mate. I think it's going to be a good one. But that's probably why I'm hedging my bets for that to be a great closing film.
All right, well, let's make our list and we'll see who does the best one. No, I'm not finalized yet. I know that I've got to be finalized by Sunday, but I'm not finalized. I've definitely going to go see The Bar by Alex de la Iglesia because he's made some of the greatest films I've ever seen. Yeah,
five people stuck in a coffee shop.
He can make it work, honestly. I've seen the stuff he does. Unreal.
You're probably right. Actually, at the same time, I'm watching Third Night, which basically it's a home invasion film where people get you survive the first two nights, and somebody does in the third night. Could be great, could be shit. I don't know.
Oh, I think I've got that marked down. I think
but interesting. Actually, before I forget, so I've been talking to the guys behind the film called Ruin Me on Twitter. Week.
Yeah, I've got that marked down as well. An interesting plot.
These guys are great. So not only are they fun people to talk to, they've actually got a lot of promo behind their movie. So there's backpacks in this film, right? And all the people behind the film are going to be at Fright Fest in these signature backpacks, which are part of the film, which is going to be great. So I was umming and ahhing between watching Ruin Me and watching Attack of the Adult Babies, who we are friends-ish, kind of know Dominic Brunt, who made the film. We know, don't we? We can say hello to the guy, right? If you see him down the street. So I'm thinking I should see Dominic's film, but it's a film about adults in adult nappies and a home invasion film. I'm not sure if I want to watch that.
In the trailer, a man does punch a meat cleaver.
He does, and Dominic's got this thing called the shit cannon, which I want to work out what it's that about. So that could be quite fun.
No, you don't.
Well, he hyped it big time at Glasgow. So I'm torn between watching Attack at Adult Babies and Ruin Me. But the guys that ruined me have tweeted like hell saying, mate, you got to watch it. Come down. We'll sort you out this. And it'll be great. So I don't know. And there's a film called Our Evil, which looks completely fucked up. It's probably my pick for the one that's going to shock and scare everyone or surprise everyone at Fright Fest. So if you haven't seen it if you haven't got it marked down as one to watch or one to look at, go and check it out. It's got two screenings on a Friday and a Sunday. It's Brazilian, I think. But it looks pretty messed up, man. I won't give the plot away, but it's about a position thing again. Spiritual powers and this guy's fighting to save his daughter. The poster says Sixth Sense and Exorcist comes together. So I don't know. It could be fun.
Okay. All right, man. All right.
What else?
Nip it in the bud, Mal. Let's get these lists.
Go on.
Put right. Mark down. I know you can actually see the ones that we have a shared spreadsheet. So you can actually see. But don't look at my tab. Just write down which ones listeners. You think are the best. Right.
But for background, listeners, every year I create a little spreadsheet of films. And then Richie and I share it, and then we try and work out what we're going to watch together. It's not as sad as it sounds.
that's not the truth. Who are you?
But I've got invariably, we end up watching completely different stuff and compare notes, so it worked out quite well. So are we going through the list now, or are we going to come through the list later?
No, Mal, we've got to nip this in the bud, mate. This is our first pod ever, and you're never going to stop.
You know, I can talk for England, right?
So I completely missed out the Horror Channel, which are doing a series of films. From the 18th of August to the 30th, and I will publish a list. Seven, in fact, films to watch out for, definitely. I mean, you should see them all, really. You could do your own mini Fright Fest because it's on the Horror Channel. But I'll have my my list of seven films. Definitely, definitely watch them. And then you'll know that I know horror because I've mentioned these seven.
So hang on, are you going to go through them now? Or are you going to go through them? Are you going to tweet them?
We're out of time, mate.
Are we? Wow, that's gone quick, isn't it?
I know. So, yeah, okay. I reckon I'll have a badass list and I'll share it out.
No worries. Well, look, I think we should wrap it up, given that I've talked forever and we can go on for another couple of hours, I think. I'll be tweeting this podcast when it's out. My Twitter handle is Mal Jutley. It's MALJUTLEY. Look, as a first go at this, I think, you know, just two guys having a laugh, talking about horror films and horror stuff in general. I'm sure we'll do another one and we'll see the feedback on it. But Rizzo, I think it's gone all right.
Yes, I am at Reyes on Twitter. So that's R-E-Y-E-S, like the...
As in Jose Antonio.
Yeah, he was there for a bit. But I was the first one, man. I'm older. I was here first.
And don't forget the Horror Pod handle is at AI Horror Pod. And we'll tweet that out as well and make sure you get to hear the podcast. But look, that's been great. I've enjoyed this, mate. It's our first one. We've talked about stuff that we enjoy, and I'm sure it'll grow and grow.
And the secret, Mal, is that the second one can be about stuff we saw at Fright Fest. This stuff is right in itself, mate.
It is, mate. Yeah, you know, it's easy as this podcast luck. Good stuff. All right, well, thanks everyone. Thanks for listening. Thanks for giving us a bit of your time. Tweet us, let us know how what you thought and everything else, and then we'll surely put up another one as soon as we get Gags to record it for us. Again, thanks again for listening.
We do a proper one next time.
Yeah, a bit more plan behind it.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.